Hi everyone, this is Mark, the actual Mark who writes and co-produces the show, not the character I play in Archive 81. Anyway, so that was Archive 81, The Golden Age. Dan and I really hope you like it. We had a bunch of fun putting it together. I got to experiment a bit with the writing. Dan got to do some cool stuff with the sound design. We're really proud of it. Now, just so I make myself abundantly clear, this was not the end of Archive 81. There will be more Archive 81. We do not have a set timetable for when Archive 81 will return, but Archive 81 will return. So, just to give you a sense of where we are and what our future plans are, Dan and I are going to take a little time away from Archive 81 in order to work on another cool fiction podcast thing. It involves demons, a music festival, an evil villain that may or may not be based on Ed Sheeran, and over 30 original songs. It's our most ambitious project to date, and we are very, very excited to share it with you once it's closer to being, you know, completed. If you are inwardly screaming, hey, don't do that, I want Archive 81, and I want it now, I definitely get that. Honestly, Dan and I just need a little time to work on a non-Archive 81 thing so we don't grow tired and bored of the Archive 81 universe. Making the Deep Vault, which is our other podcast that you should definitely check out, it's got robots, making that in between seasons 1 and 2 was a really good idea, and we want to do something similar in this case. Also, to be completely honest and probably a little bit too personal, Dan and I are just a tiny bit burnt out, so not having a set-in-stone deadline will be positive for mental health reasons. Sound good? I hope so. We are going to keep you in the loop on everything as it happens, so just follow our Facebook, Twitter, Tumblr, and Reddit pages for all the latest news. Also, talk about Archive 81 and share weird theories and fan art. We get a kick out of it when you do that. Now, before I get to the fun stuff, I want to say thank you. Thank you so much for listening to our show, for leaving reviews on iTunes, for telling your friends, family, hated exes, random passerby, whoever, about us, for making fan art, for posting theories on Reddit, for just enjoying Archive 81, and a special shout out to people who support us on Patreon. That really helps us make the show and pay our actors and all that good stuff. Archive 81 is something that Dan and I do in our spare time. We've got full-time jobs and lives and friends that we try really hard to see occasionally. We do this because we enjoy making strange and weird and cool stories with sound. So it's really gratifying that you actually enjoy our podcast. Thank you. Also, an extra special thank you to Larry Josephson and the Radio Foundation Studio in New York for letting us use their space. Now, on to the fun stuff. We asked you through Facebook and Twitter and Tumblr if you had any questions for us, and we are going to answer them. Now, because of our schedules, and because Dan will be gallivanting around in Europe with his family, we were not able to record them together. But Dan did record some solo answers to questions, and I'll be occasionally passing the metaphorical microphone to him. But I do have a special guest, John Maher, the actor who played Jeremy in The Deep Vault and Jacob/Rat in Archive 81. Oh, by the way, this will be part one of our Q&A. Part two will be exclusively for our Patreon backers. Before I get to the Q&A, I've got some recommendations to make. Since Archive 81 will be on hiatus, you might be asking yourself, how will I fill these meaningless hours that make up my dreary, uneventful life? Well, you can always listen to some cool fiction podcasts. There's also The Bright Sessions, which is basically about superheroes and therapy, kind of. It's weirder than that, but it's really good. Ars Paradoxica, which has lots of mind-bending time travel, and it's really good. Beef and Dairy Network, which is essentially indescribable, but it is by far, no question, the funniest podcast or fiction podcast out there. It's very, very good. Anyway, you should also check out The Bridge, which is about Intercontinental Bridge. It's just really good. The Dark Tome, which is really scary. Darkest Night, which is also really scary and also has Lee Pace, who's amazing. The Black Tapes, another scary thing. Welcome to Night Vale, which you've definitely heard of. Greater Boston, which has a great sense of place, and a whole bunch more. For more recommendations, check out the Audio Drama Sunday hashtag on Twitter. I started it like a year ago, and it is very cool to see that it's taken off. Yay. Now, without further ado, say hi, John.
Hi, wonderful and very kind and very wonderful audience.
Cool. So, on to the first couple questions, which are from Tumblr. And also, just by the way, I'm going to be skipping some questions that we've either answered before or we don't want to answer because they're too plot-based. Anyway, so first off, from My Dear Scout from Tumblr asks, where can I buy that Lights You Can't See song? Please make it available on iTunes. And this is actually a question that we get a lot. A lot of people ask for the music. And that is all Dan, by the way. Dan basically composed all the songs in the second season. And they are all available for our Patreon backers to download. We have different versions of the song. They all sound really interesting and cool and fun. And they're basically all there. You just have to be a Patreon supporter. We also have the Lights You Can't See song. We posted that on to Twitter and Facebook. So if you just scroll through our tweets, you can find it there and listen to it to your heart's content. But the only way you can download it is to become a Patreon subscriber. And that is the answer. Okay. Moving on. Soft Gay Kid on Tumblr asks a question about basically what the change in format from season one to season two was like, and what motivated the change in format. Basically, it's not really a change in format. It's still a tape. We just decided to put the tape in Dan's body. And the reason that we did that
is because it made it a lot more fun for me.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it made... Yeah, it was a fun scene with Rat, but it's also a it also kind of broadened the scope of season two, and that's something that we really wanted to do. We didn't want to just have another essentially Dan in a old insane asylum listening to even more tapes. We wanted to do something weirder, something a little bit more surreal, and the change in format really helped us do that.
It also is a little bit truer to life because sometimes Dan comes over to my apartment. Dan actually lives very close to me. He lives like a few blocks away. And sometimes Dan comes over to my apartment and I actually put metal objects inside his stomach. It's a habit of ours that dates back a few years. Mm-hmm.
Yes, yes. Your personal life is very, very weird. Anyway, Soft Gay Kid also asks, did doing the Deep Vault shape the second season of Archive 81 in any way? And it did. It did a little bit. I think we got a lot more comfortable with actors through the Deep Vault. The Deep Vault was very much a kind of fun, fast-paced action adventure where we had a couple people in a room. You were one of them, John, basically acting and reacting, and we were able to do a large portion of it in a weekend, and that kind of shaped how we did the second season production-wise. But as for plot and sound design, actually, Deep Vault was written... the first drafts of it were written before Archive 81. I wrote the first drafts before that, but we decided to edit it and change it and make it a lot better in between seasons and use it. Basically, I think the main thing is it made me much more comfortable writing dramatic action scenes, and I think it helped shape the way that Dan sound designed action scenes. We learned a lot about writing and doing action from the Deep Vault. And do you know which one you enjoyed more? Basically, I don't know. I can't decide between which of my children I like more. But Deep Vault took a little bit less time to record. That was fun. I honestly can't decide, though. John, which you have been involved in season one of Archive 81, Deep Vault, and season two of Archive 81. Which one did you enjoy performing in most?
It's funny because you're basically asking me which extreme aspect of my personality was easiest and most enjoyable to perform. And I think, to be honest, it's kind of a hard question to answer. They were all different takes on like the anxious nebbishy type. And I think, I guess I'd say this. I think Jeremy was probably the most fun to perform just because I could go all out in an emotional way. It also happened to be sort of a rough time in my own life, so I ended up sort of vicariously living through Jeremy is not the right way to put it. I was able to channel a lot of my outside emotional turmoil into Jeremy's emotional turmoil. You would think that Rat would be the most fun to play, and to an extent he was a lot of fun, but I actually found that I had to very much keep myself under control for Rat. Rat, I could never really let go entirely with Rat because it was always a much stronger character performance. Like, I always had to be a lot more honed. I actually found that my tendency was to try to blow Rat out and make him even more ridiculous and more weird and experimental and vicious and also like loving the, you know, the mix of pain and weirdness, and I was always sort of told to dial it back, so it was mm-hmm. kind of a challenge to do that.
Yeah, it felt like the character could really be dialed up to 11, and at certain points the character is, but we also wanted there to be a subtlety to it, and that was basically just our major note for you, and one that we think came out in the performance really well. It's really difficult to do like a mixture of balls to the wall, like weirdness and crazy pinky in the brain experimentation, but also maintain that core of subtlety and human emotion. And I think in the end it really works. Okay, awesome. Podcast Enthusiast asks, will fictional Daniel Powell ever get to be happy? And basically, I don't know yet. I hope he will be. I'm rooting for the character. I mean, it's based on one of my best friends, but we do not have, honestly, like, I don't know. Maybe he will, maybe he won't. What I can promise is that Daniel Powell will undergo challenges because he is a character in a fictional work and nothing will ever be easy for him. Anyway, TransG asked a question, how is it doing the Foley sounds, like all the screaming and stuff? And for this one, I'm going to put it over to Dan, who recorded his answer in advance. Dan, take it away.
A funny thing about the screaming in particular, apart from the screams in the story, when we're recording a scene, we'll have our actors scream. But then, separately and apart from the scene, we'll usually go through and have our actors record a bank of screams just in isolation. And we'll direct them to do some funny short screams like, ah, 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 and then, you know, do some long blood-curdling screams. So there's a lot of variety there, which is pretty funny to do in the studio. But it's also incredibly useful because that gives us a big toolkit and palette to work with of things beyond the dialogue where we can kind of use, you know, sounds from the characters themselves to flesh out action sequences or whatever. In terms of doing Foley, it's a little case by case. A lot of cloth movement, you know, rustling, that stuff is just me like jingling my backpack or my jacket in front of a microphone, sort of in time with what's going on. I'm guessing since you asked about the screaming, you're maybe curious about the body horror stuff. A lot of the gore, that's not anything I make myself, but it does come from a boutique sound library I have of an actual deer carcass being skinned and eviscerated by hunters. So that's real guts and bones you're hearing, and that's a it makes for some, you know, pretty visceral gross body horror sounds.
Sister Ryder asks a question for John, actually. What are some things you've done before podcasts, and what led you to play Jeremy for the Deep Vault?
What are some things I've done before podcasts? I've cooked a bowl of rice for myself. I once was asked by a person to plant a tree in front of her cabana in a bunch of sand. I worked at a Jewish wedding at a beach club, actually. I did a lot of working at a beach club, is really the answer to this question. What are some of the things I've done before podcasts? So I like I said in an earlier answer, I did a little bit of acting in middle school, but I really never acted. I worked on the tech crew. I played in pit band. I play winds. I play saxophone and bassoon. My actual legitimate career, the thing that I do for money and not for the love of my friends, well, sort of money, we're getting to that, is I'm a journalist. I write for a publication called Publishers Weekly, which covers the book industry and publishing industry. It's a trade magazine. I sort of wear a few hats there, and I also run on the side with my pal Eric, who also happens to be dear college friends with Dan. We run a website called The Dot and Line, which covers cartoons and animation. So those are some of the things that I've done before and during the same period of time in which I recorded these podcasts. As for what led me to play Jeremy, well, they asked me, which helped, which totally helped. I think it's possible, actually, that Dan has just heard me doing so many silly, weird voices over the years, that he just found it impossible not to ask me to lend my mellifluous pipes to his fine show, and that, dear listeners, is why I was Jeremy on the Deep Vault.
Well, the other answer is I liked your performance as Jacob in
that helps. 81.
So, yeah, I mean, the actual answer is Dan and I really liked your performance as Jacob, and so when we've thought of someone who is nebbishly and cowardly and computer wizardy, we thought of you, and you should definitely be flattered by that. Another question on Tumblr, this one by Zan Wild, is I want to know how he pictured Rat. I personally envisioned him as short with nothing proportioned properly. Everything was asymmetrical.
That's funny. So when I build characters in my head, when I see a character and I want to embody that character, I don't actually first circumscribe them by the idea of what they would look like, but rather the idea of what they would sound, which makes a lot of sense in podcasts, so it's good that that's just kind of how I do it in real life anyway. So I didn't actually picture Rat as anything at first. I heard him as a sort of Igor from Young Frankenstein meets the Monarch from Venture Brothers. So it was a very over the top performance that was pretty heavily dialed down by the two masters of ceremonies. So I guess in that iteration, when Rat sounded like this, I kind of pictured him exactly how someone who sounds like this would look. He was short. He was kind of Batman the Animated Series penguin-esque, very cobble-potty, as it were, kind of lurchy. I'm pretty sure he had one googly eye. He had sort of long, creepy fingers. He had a long nose and fraying hair, pretty much the exact opposite, at least I hope, from how Mark and Dan pictured him since they pictured him looking like me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, we just basically pictured him as looking almost exactly like you, which is not like, does not lead to the best fan art, but I think that's just exactly who I pictured him as looking like. Like, I didn't picture Rat as looking anything too weird. Like, I think Dan looks really, really weird, but Rat just looks like a person. He's just, you know, terrible. So next we are going to go to the questions from our Patreon supporters. And if you would like to support us on Patreon, you can do that fairly easily. You can go to patreon.com/archive81 and you can support us. We're taking a little bit of a hiatus from posting stuff, but we are still working feverishly on a bunch of different podcast projects that you will hopefully hear soon. Anyway, so Ariel Teague asks, for each of you, what's your favorite book? Dan, I will give the metaphorical microphone to you.
Dan here. I really like Perdido Street Station by China Mieville. It's a mind-blowingly cool work of weird fiction. It's also set in an otherworldly and fantastical city. I read it as a teenager, and it really, really got me into sci-fi and fantasy. If you like Archive 81, especially Season 2, you will probably really, really like this book. There's weird humanoid beetles. There's giant moths that eat people's dreams to stay alive. It's amazing. It's one of the coolest things I've ever read.
Awesome answer, Dan. Actually, I have always extolled the virtues of Jeff Vandermeer. He's one of my absolute favorite writers. He's amazing. The Southern Reach trilogy is absolutely phenomenal. But for this one, I'm going to give a shout out to Ancillary Justice, which is a book by Anne Leckie. And it is about a woman who used to be a spaceship. And it's got a bunch of cool themes about colonialism and gender and just a whole bunch of really cool stuff, and it's so well written, and I absolutely adore it. Even though it's not horror, you should definitely read it. John, do you have a favorite book that you could?
So I work at a magazine that covers the books and publishing industry, and as such, you are asking me an impossible question. my home is less a home than a library with a bed in it. There are approximately 4,200 potential iterations of my answer. But I think that the easiest way to boil this down here is what is my favorite fiction book? And I guess by that, I mean, what is my favorite 20th century American fiction book? Let's go with Toni Morrison's Song of Solomon. It's a perfect book. It's a perfect novel. If you have not read it, you should read it. If you don't want to read it, you're wrong. And that's pretty much all I got for you.
Toni Morrison is very, very good. Oh, also, I always do this, but Jeff Vandermeer actually edited a collection of weird fiction called The Weird. It's over 1,000 pages long. It has a bunch of short stories in the genre that Archive 81 is basically set, which is weird fiction, and it takes a very diverse look at the genre, which is gratifying. It's a really, really wonderful collection of short stories, and if you were wondering what inspired Archive 81, that is probably the book to go to. Hunter from Patreon asks, what podcasts do you guys listen to? And have you considered doing work with other artists as well? Do you have other future projects planned in the future? Dan, you can start on this one.
Lately, I don't really listen to many podcasts. I'll be straight with you. I work at a public radio podcasting company by day, and I work on Archive 81 and other freelance projects by night. So with all the time I spend working on podcasts, I really don't want to listen to them when I'm off the clock. I mostly just listen to instrumental music that does not involve the human voice in any capacity, because I want to relax and not think about that frequency range when I'm not at work. I'm sure Mark has plenty of great recommendations, though. We haven't formally planned to collaborate with any other artists, but it's something we, you know, considered if we found someone who we, you know, we had a good idea, story, creative chemistry with and felt like we could do cool work together. But most of the time, our production process is pretty self-enclosed, where it's Mark and I bouncing ideas around the room, Mark writing things, me doing sound things.
Basically, for podcasts, I recommended a bunch of fiction podcasts in the beginning of the episode, so definitely check those out. For other podcasts, I listen to a lot of podcasts, so it's very difficult for me to pick just one, but I think if I had to pick just a couple, I am a big fan of My Brother and Me. It is the one thing I go to which can reliably make me laugh every single time I listen to it. So definitely check out My Brother and Me, and everything the McElroy brothers do. They are absolutely wonderful. And as for what we're working on in the future, talked a little bit about that at the beginning, but I can't get into it further. Just to give you a very sneak preview, there will be just a ton of songs, just so many songs. So moving on,
Steven Universe. They're working on Steven Universe next. That's what's happening.
Yeah, no.
Don't tell
no.
Rebecca Sugar, please.
I wish. I do adore Steven Universe, but it does have a similar tone, actually. Anyway, I should shut up about our top secret project. Anyway, so Kyle Norton asked us a couple questions, and I'm going to let Dan take these ones to start.
First off, how many years have you invested, education, side projects, etc., to get to this point? I've been recording and engineering sound in some capacity since I was about 9 years old, and I'm 27 now, but I'd say it's only in the past 3 or 4 years where I've really been doing it steadily as a professional thing, so since I left college. So I've always been working with sound. I've always been playing with music. I grew up in a musical family, but a honed professional specialization in sound design and podcast audio work really took serious shape for me in the past 3 years or so. But it is honestly a lifelong pursuit. I've always been immersed with sound, and hopefully I will always be immersed in sound and not get sick of it. Next question, what are the degrees you two have, and have they been useful? For me, I majored in English. I don't have a degree in music or sound or engineering. I just spent a lot of my free time practicing it for fun, and then I decided I just wanted to do that. I think my English degree has been useful in terms of knowing how to analyze texts and see what works in putting a story together. I like reading books, but what I found really useful about it at the time I was in school was that it left me a fair amount of free time to work on things I enjoyed more, like music and audio stuff. So short answer, degree was useful, but a lot of things I did outside of school also helped. Where do you find inspiration if you get stuck? What's your process for getting unstuck? I don't know. Inspiration is sort of open-ended for me. It just sort of comes from music, cool sounds in the natural world, just walking around and being bored and seeing, you know, what kind of thoughts pop into your head. I find when I'm not necessarily inspired in the traditional lightning strikes the artist sense of the word, I'm usually at least somewhat motivated to try and make something or work on something. I think inspiration is great, but I think getting any kind of creative work done is just about sitting down and forcing yourself to finish something. And if you're scared of finishing something because you're worried no one will like it or it won't be that good, I recommend just reminding yourself that you're going to be dead one day, probably a lot sooner than you think, and you'll feel a lot better having finished something and having tried genuinely than instead of giving up on it out of fear.
For me, how many years have you invested to get to this point? So I studied television, radio, and film in college, and that was really helpful because it allowed me to pursue a bunch of weird radio things and also prepare for my day job, which is in public radio. But I think, honestly, what's prepared me most to do this is doing weird audio projects. My senior's thesis was a sci-fi War of the Worlds meets Lost thing that's actually available as a download for our Patreon backers. And Dan played the main character, and that's kind of how we met. And I think, honestly, like, the best thing that's prepared me to do this has just been writing and recording and doing weird audio dramas. Where do you find inspiration? If you get stuck, what's your process for getting unstuck? personally, I'm very inspired by deadlines and having accountability. Basically, because me and Dan work as a pair, I have to finish 2 scripts a week or things kind of grind to a halt. So having that hang over my head is a very good motivator. I also really believe in turning off devices and turning off things that can distract me while I'm working. So I will turn off the internet, I will turn off my phone, and I will essentially stare at a blank page until I grow bored. And then when I grow bored, my mind invents things, so I'm not bored anymore. And I use the stuff that my mind invents to write. It's fun. It's a good way to work. You should try it. So Jason Trait asks, Mr. Davenport is my favorite character. How did you find the voice actor who plays him? How much input did he have in the salesman-like speech, mannerisms, and low-level passive-aggressive shifts from folksy to creepy that he pulls off so well? Dan, I'm going to leave that to you.
The voice actor who plays Mr. Davenport is my dad, David Powell. We ended up casting him because we were, one, tragically shortchanged for older actors who weren't in their 20s when we were casting season one and didn't, you know, really know how to find actors. And, you know, even with voice actors closer to Davenport's age range, you know, we auditioned like 6 or 7 like professional voice actors for Davenport, but none of them just felt right. It was just like there's something that wasn't there. So sort of just in order to like maximize our options, I asked my dad to read for the part and it ended up working perfectly. My dad has a pretty extensive theater background, and he's also spent a lot of time before he retired working as a school administrator. So he's pretty familiar with both the drama of stage and the drama of institutional politics. And a lot of the inflections and vocal mannerisms, you know, the way he delivers the lines, I mean, that was all him. You know, we gave him some direction, but in terms of chewing into how the lines are delivered, you know, that was just sort of him, you know, going for it. And then Mark, you know, in the script writing really drove home the salesman lingo and, you know, sleazy middle manager language at the writing stage. So that's a little backstory into Davenport for you.
Yeah. And basically, I just want to say Dan's dad is the nicest person, one of the nicest people I have ever met. And hearing him go from kindly Southern gentleman who cares about what you're doing and doesn't have a mean word to say about anybody to an evil bureaucrat is very, very fun. And I always get a kick out of it. So the last couple questions for part one of the bonus episode are from email. And Layla asks, do you have any specific ideas of what the characters look like in the show? And we talked a little bit about what Rat looked like. To answer the question more broadly, I kind of have a rough idea of what the characters look like. For example, Daniel Powell looks like Daniel Powell because Daniel Powell is based on Daniel Powell. And then Mark looks like Mark because Mark is based on Mark. And I kind of, for the most part, I'm sure I had like rough, like mental images of what they look like. But as of now, they're kind of supplanted by the images of the actors and what they look like. So Lou looks like the actor who plays him. Melody looks like the actress who plays her, and so on and so forth. Cassie asks, love Archive 81. You made a pretty big genre switch between seasons, though. What drove that decision? How did your listener base change as a result? What did you learn from that decision? So Dan's going to start this off.
What drove the decision, I think, was wanting to try something different. It would have been very easy to have done another Here's Dan Alone Somewhere listening to found tapes and unpacking a story. But it might have gotten stale, and Mark and I didn't want to do the sort of things where we didn't want to be the podcast equivalent of a band covering itself on every album. We wanted to do something bigger and more ambitious and newer. So it was really just a desire to, yeah, just do something different, try to explore a new territory. Our listener base, I think, has stayed fairly loyal. We have some people who bailed at season 2 because they didn't like the change of direction, which is fair. We have people who like season two better. It's honestly, you know, you can never really tell how people are going to react to something like that. You just kind of have to go with your gut and do what feels good. And, you know, luckily a lot of people have stuck with us and still really like it. And yeah, what we learned from that decision is that, you know, it's challenging and hard to change directions. It's also good to challenge yourself. And I think we both learned a lot from that. So, yeah.
Thanks, Dan. And yeah, we did make a pretty big genre switch. And honestly, I'm super, super glad we did, because we write and make this to entertain people, but we also do it to make something that we would enjoy and to make sure that we aren't bored with what we create. And we didn't want to do something boring and pedestrian. And the whole premise of, like, the type of horror that we're doing is that it is unsettling and weird. And you can't be unsettling and weird if you stay in a specific box all the time and you don't grow out of it and do interesting things that surprise people and go in different weirder places and try interesting things. And season two gave me a lot more opportunities to write what I wanted to write and write in more interesting ways. And it gave Dan a lot of opportunities to do weirder, more interesting sound things. And I'm so glad we did that. As for how did your listener base change as a result? Some people liked it. Some people didn't. I mean, yeah, some people liked it, some people didn't. Like, if you're not on board, that's fine. If you don't like the podcast, that's fine. Like, I'm cool. I like our audience. I really like the people that come with us. And as for what did we learn from that decision? Honestly, I'm really glad we made it, and I really hope that we can keep surprising and shocking and weirding you out. So that is the end of part one of our two parts bonus episode. John and I will be answering even more questions, but we will be answering them as part of an exclusive part two Patreon episode that you can only get if you are a Patreon subscriber. But once again, thank you so much for supporting us. Thank you so much for listening. Dan and I really genuinely do appreciate it. And we are super excited to work on more Archive 81 things. We're super excited to work on more podcast stuff in general. And we're super excited to bring you more interesting audio content. So if you're a Patreon supporter, go to patreon.com/archive81 and download part two of this episode. If you're not a Patreon supporter, become a Patreon supporter and download part two of this episode. Until next time, this is Mark signing off.
This is John also signing off.
And here's Dan signing off.
Thank you guys so much for all your questions. They were really, really good and a lot of fun to answer. And thank you for listening to and supporting the show. It's super awesome. We really appreciate it. You're the wind beneath our wings. Until next time, peace.